Hi, I'm Josh Givens.
And I'm Stan.
And welcome to this episode of Rescuing Churches, where it's always a great adventure discussing church revitalization and pastoral life. Learn more at 614ministries.org. Dad, we've recently discussed pastoral discouragement on the show.
The Great Adventure.
The Great Adventure
of pastoral discouragement,
yeah. Which probably doesn't sound like a great adventure, but it can be.
It should be.
And there might not be anything more discouraging than when you're a pastor or a lay leader or an elder, and your church starts to go through some type of move or transition that's really difficult or challenging or just plain old painful. And it doesn't seem like you'll ever survive it. Sometimes you thought God was working, but now everything seems confusing and uncertain. And this is sometimes the case with God. And in fact, it can even be a good and healthy thing. We're going to look at this a little bit closer today with a one-point outline.
Yes.
That's how I'm going to say that. It's a one-point outline. But normally you have like a 4 or 5 point outline. Today you have 1 point with many sub-points underneath it. So
it's a rant.
For all of you out there who are listening and thinking like, you know, you should normally have some kind of structure to an outline, that's not going to be the case here today.
Right.
So it's going to drive people like me crazy. But we're going to make this work.
Hello, and welcome to Rescuing Churches with Stan and Josh Givens. This is the official podcast of 614 Ministries, where we exist to renew vision and restore hope at struggling churches across the country. With over 80% of churches in decline and 1,500 pastors a month battling depression, we strive to equip members and encourage ministers to pursue new directions of stability and growth.
Emphasize some of those subpoints underneath each one of these. And the point is, when God starts to move, it's often difficult. It can be a difficult and trying time for the individuals or the groups that he is using. So
absolutely.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Absolutely. Well, when you think about ministry and as a pastor, I'm 40 plus years doing this. You get these thoughts in your head that I really want to see a mighty work of God. I want to see revival. I want to see God move among the people, among our city. I want to see our community revived. I want to see our church revived. And all of that sounds fantastic. We love the idea of that. And at least for me, and I think most pastors, you begin to imagine that as the pews are beginning to fill up, the energy in the church is positive. Man, people are just loving coming to church. The parking lot, you got parking lot issues because there's not enough room to park. And now the police have to park your people and you got to have policemen down at the front, you know, directing traffic. And so, whoo-hoo.
Man, you've given this some thought, man.
It's a mighty work of God. And you're imagining, you know, evangelism and discipleship happening at these incredible exponential rates. And you imagine these spiritual moves happening. And when we imagine all this, or I would say maybe now at, you know, my age, fantasize about it.
Exactly.
As a simple work of God, and we're just going to get to go about our normal routines while that's happening. Like, I'm just going to, you know, make a few hospital visits here and there, have a long time to prepare my sermon. Everything's going to go smoothly.
This will all be easy.
It's all going to be really, really easy. But when you read the script, and it's funny because we teach the scriptures all the time as pastors. If you're teaching the word of God, don't miss this. All of the big works of God in the entire book of from Genesis through the Revelation, all of the great works have great trials with
him. So much irony in this.
They come through. People come through such hard times to see the mighty hand of God and the mighty work of God.
And you guys preach on that
regularly.
But then
we lay in bed and think, oh, this will just be so awesome when God does
that's
a great
so
work.
That's so ironic.
And I don't have to do any hard work to get there.
That's
and it's
so
sure
ironic.
Not going to cost me anything. It's not going to be painful. It's not going to be difficult.
Of course not.
It's not going to be stressful. But when he does a work, most of the works that he accomplishes, and even in my own ministry, it feels like sometimes you're just going so backwards. It's like, this is all backwards,
Lord.
Nothing good's happening. But that's been true of so many men and so many movements of God in Scripture, right?
I'll
start out with the first, because you said we're going to use multiple points.
Multiple to make the same subpoints.
Subpoints.
To make the same
so
point.
So when Moses is called to redeem God's children, he simply has to go tell Pharaoh. Now get this. He's just going to tell Pharaoh, let my people go.
Yep.
If you hear Moses, you're like, so here's what you want me to do. All right. First of all, I'm not good at speaking. I got to make a lot of excuses first.
Oh, yeah.
Moses made a lot of excuses. But here's what you want me to do. Go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. Whew, that's okay. All right. Let me memorize that.
That's simple. I can handle it.
Let my people go. I'm going to write it down. Write it down. Let my people go. Let my people go. I got to memorize. I'm going to go stand in front of Pharaoh and say, let my people go. Well, did it go that way? No.
It didn't go that way at all.
It was a long, he had to go say it multiple times. Every time he said it, he had to come back with a whole nother, if you don't, there's going to be another plague. There's going to be another problem. And it was a continual battle to the point that the Israelites were put under this heavy, heavy quota by Pharaoh to say, hey, we've been helping you build, helping you make the bricks to build all our buildings and build all our pyramids. We've been helping you make these bricks by giving you the straw. Now you got to go get your own straw and you got to keep the same quota.
Exactly.
So the people you're trying to redeem just got double dog dumped on, right? While you're trying to help them be redeemed by God. A work of God is at foot. I mean, God's doing all this, and yet it looks like it's going backwards. So, I mean, you can just track all kinds of times like that. You know, when they finally are released by Pharaoh after the, you know, the great Passover and Pharaoh's sons killed in the night, they're finally released. So they end up free, but as they're traveling, they're pinned against the Red Sea. And again, it feels like everything just went wrong right after something positive happened. Right. That's just one story in the Bible that we've told as pastors multiple times. And what's happening during that story is God's doing a great work, but there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of anxiety happening. There's lot of, oh my gosh, you know, you can track so many examples of the Israelites going through the wilderness and wandering. Fast forward, you know, 40 years when they finally get through the promised land. What happens? Well, they get there and woohoo, we're here at the promised land, but oh, look, the Jordan River's at flood stage. We can't get across. Well, now we got to trust God to get us across. And when he finally lets us get across again on dry land, they went across on dry land, just like with the Red Sea. After you cross that flooding river, you have to conquer the unconquerable Jericho. The city of Jericho is the first thing inside the promised land. So it's like, we think of these great works of God and we forget they're all fraught with challenges and trust moments and follow the Lord moments. And then, of course, once they get inside the promised land, it's filled with a bunch of ites, you know, the the Perizzites and the Jebusites and the Termites and all the ites. All the ites are there. And we got to get rid of all those ites, right?
Exactly.
The Edomites have to go.
Yep.
So they have to battle the whole time. So here, what was my point? When God starts to move, and that's what all we want as pastors is God to move in our church.
Yep.
Be careful what you pray for. When God starts to move, it's often difficult and trying time for the individuals in the groups that he is using. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. So, you know, there's so many more examples. Abraham's a good example. Yeah. Hey, good news, Abraham. You're going to be a father of the nation of Israel. Your children and your offsprings are going to be as numerous as the stars in the sky.
Well, that sounds great.
Beautiful night sky, the sands of the seashore. By the way, your wife's barren. Well, wait a minute.
That didn't go like planned.
I thought we had a deal there. I thought we had a promise. A great work of God's going to be birthed in Abraham. With a barren wife.
Exactly.
Again, how complicated does that get?
It doesn't always go the way you think.
And you know, it's like the vision that God gave Abraham almost dies in that moment when he realizes his wife can't bear children. But then when he finally does, she does have children miraculously, a legitimate child, Isaac. What does God tell Abraham 30 plus years later when he has Isaac?
Sacrifice him on an altar.
Yeah, I'd like you to take him up on the mountain and actually kill him.
Go kill him.
Yeah. Well, he's your only son. Your only son, Isaac, who is going to birth this bigger
kind of
nation.
That, you know, what moment?
Yeah. What? But again, it's like the death of the vision. It's like, really, Lord? we were finally doing so good.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, I want to test
yep.
and try this and purify it. And I want your faith to be refined in all this. When we choose as ministers to have this great work of God going, when we choose as ministers to do that, we have to come to the place where we say, Lord, in the middle of this great work of God, I'll do whatever you ask. You know, the hard parts, the uphill battles, the long nights of prayer, the struggles and the trials, all of that's fine with me. I'll do whatever it takes, right? You and I did a study on Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Summarize. Can you give a little summary of the Joseph thing? Just the crazy, you know, dream that he had with his brother.
Yeah, we co-taught through this series together. This was from Swindoll's book. It was great. If we can put the link to that in the show notes, if anybody wants to use it for a small group out there, it was a
really
great,
good small group. Any of those character studies
were great to teach through. Yeah, I mean, you have God sending, giving a dream, coming, you know, giving a dream to
youngest brother Joseph.
Yeah, to the youngest brother. That all the brothers would one day submit to Joseph.
Yep.
And it's like, well, you know, okay, how's that going to go over with the brothers?
Yeah, and then Joseph very foolishly decides to share that.
Yep. And then the brothers plot to kill him, but ultimately only sell him into slavery.
Yeah, cruel slavery.
Very cruel slavery. And that's a, okay, well, this isn't going like it's supposed to go mm-hmm. moment.
Right.
You know, this is not going the way that it's supposed to go. But Joseph decides to distinguish himself and eventually interprets a dream for the king, and life starts to get better. Everything starts to look up a little bit. And he later, subsequently, becomes the personal manager of the king's stuff,
yep.
like all his right. stuff.
Potiphar's stuff all was under his management.
Yep.
He was literally the right hand of Potiphar. And then Potiphar's wife,
oh yeah,
you know, gets a thing for Joseph.
That didn't go too well.
Yeah, and so when Joseph will not disregard his moral values, but actually stands on the moral values he should stand on, what happens to him? Right back to jail.
Right back to
jail. He's lied about. He's accused. He's falsely accused.
He goes back to the pit.
Yeah, yeah. It actually says to the king's jail.
Yep.
Right. And I think Potiphar kept him close at that point because Joseph knows everything about everything. So Potiphar's got to run down to the jail all the time and go, so you put the money in which bank and
exactly.
what's the bank account for that? And what
exactly.
was my social security number?
Yep.
Help me with this. Right. And I think Potiphar probably knew his wife was lying, but he had to punish Joseph. But it doesn't matter because Joseph's no longer out of prison.
That's right.
He's right back in prison. Right. Now, that story looks horrible till you get to the very, very end of it.
Exactly.
In the book of Genesis. And you see Joseph now restored back to leader in the kingdom in Egypt. And you see him literally saving. He interprets this dream and he's saving grain for 7 years so that nobody dies during this time of great, great famine.
And if you're just reading that story for the first time, you never see that ending coming. You never
right.
imagine
right.
he's going to go from the pit to the palace, you know, is the way that Swindoll words
yeah.
it, or the prison
yeah.
to the palace. You would have never seen that coming.
Right.
It's only a God thing that orchestrates that.
And then in the microcosm of all that, he actually saves his own family because they
yes.
have to come to
yep.
him.
That happens in there too.
Yeah, they come to him for not knowing it's him. They think he's dead.
Exactly. Yes.
So they come
even
to
know
him
that he's there.
To him for grain and help. And he's able to actually help them bring the whole family, including his dad and his younger brother Benjamin. He brings all of them into the family or into the safety of his security now and provides for him.
Which is a great lesson.
And they all bow down to
him. A great lesson in pastoral ministry is sometimes you don't even know the help that's there, that God's going to reveal
exactly.
in the middle of the situation until he actually reveals it.
Yeah.
And he'll reveal it in his time whenever that happens to be. But it might be right in the middle of what crisis is going on. And you don't even know that help is there. And it could come in the form of somebody that's going to help you, you know, as a co-leader or minister or somebody that's going to be an encouragement to you or whatever it is.
And what Joseph says in the middle of all that's really good for us as ministers to remember. Joseph says to his brothers, what Satan meant for evil,
God would use for good.
God used for good. Yep. What it says in the New Testament in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, all things work together for good. So if you're pastoring a church and you're praying for a great work of God, what you need to anticipate is a great trial to accompany that, a great testing. Yeah. You should anticipate for God to do a great work that it's going to go up and down, forwards 2 steps, backwards 5 steps.
Absolutely.
We're gonna see some good things happen, and then we're gonna feel this pullback, and we're gonna see this spiritual resistance. There's literally gonna be enemy forces. When God's doing a work, the enemy forces show up. Spiritual warfare is a real thing, and people need to recognize that.
Which is something I don't think we think about often enough.
Right, right. So my third year here at Northside, I'm a pastor at Northside Bible Church.
Oh, this is
along,
a good one.
Along with doing this wonderful podcast with my son Joshua with 614. I'm the lead pastor of a small church here in Mobile, Alabama. And I've been here 21 years, I think, coming up on 21 years, maybe longer. came here in 2000, and they had in the Constitution at the time when I came, they had every 3-year pastoral confidence vote, they called it. And it means the congregation gets to vote on
the pastor.
On annual conference Sunday once a year. We all meet and have a business meeting after church on a Sunday morning. And one of the items of that meeting is to vote on the pastor. So that particular May 2003, that particular Sunday that we did it, we had a number of families out on vacation because it's May. And we had a family show up that did not like me from the very first year I was here. When I came, they really resisted me in coming, but they didn't have the numbers at the time to solve that.
Right.
So I got the vote to come, the call to come. But that family withdrew from the church after about a year of me being here, my first year. Felt great when that happens. Like, okay, well, that's one less person that I'm having to wrestle with and resist.
Right.
Third year vote comes around. Nobody's purged any roles, not anything anybody ever thought of. Third year vote comes around, and what happens? This family shows up in mass.
Yep.
Mass. Anybody that ever played softball for our church was on our roll, and a bunch of them were softball players, and they showed up in a mass on the Sunday we're taking the vote.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm preaching on that Sunday, looking out, going, we got 27 visitors in the back row. That's amazing.
Hi there.
One-third of our congregation just grew like crazy. But when it was time to stay for the annual conference, they stayed.
Yep.
They voted me out. And on that particular Sunday, I lost my job. I got voted out.
And I'll never forget, because I was in high school at the time.
Yes, and on the front row with
34 me. Years old now, but this was back in high school.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget my brother Caleb being very mad,
yep.
Just clenching his fists, yep. Which was really funny at the time and still funny. I still joke with him about that.
Yeah.
And Mary.
Our daughter Mary.
Just crying.
Yeah. She was like,
what's going on?
She was in junior high.
I'm just going to sit here
and
cry.
Her mom's crying. You know, my wife's upset because it was a very painful morning. I had prepared y'all the night before. This may happen.
Dad could lose my job.
So, but I literally got relieved of this ministry on that day. And so it looked like it was going bad.
Yep.
I mean, coming into that, it looked, you know, everything was going good.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it went really bad
for a little bit.
You know, 20 minutes later, the minister or the guy running the meeting, the chairman of the board running the meeting, called for a freeze for the conference. I'd never heard of that, but it was a legal thing. So he froze the conference, and which means we're not taking any more votes. We got to solve whatever just happened here. And everybody gets to go home, and next Sunday we'll have another meeting to decide, you know, more about what we were going to do at the conference stuff, which was really just dealing with our budget.
That's got to be like a Perry Mason thing where you take like a recess.
That was very much what it was, a recess.
There you go.
And in the Constitution, it actually stated at the time that the official board could form an executive committee of board and trustees. And they themselves can appoint the interim pastor when we're without a pastor.
Well, now we can.
We just voted our pastor out, so we're without a pastor.
Yep.
So they just asked me to stay on the front row. We all sat there, the whole family sat there and waited. And people at the church were a little bit shocked, and kind of there's a whole, you know, brouhaha happening in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
People mad at the people that showed up to vote us out.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I don't know what's – here's what I was positive of, and I told our family this the night before. I know God's called me to Northside. I don't know why, if they fire me or let me go, I don't know why that would happen unless there's something else God's called me to, and we'll have to wait and see what that is. But if not, God's got this, and I know he's called me. So we sat on the front row, literally in the blank. I have no idea about this executive committee meeting. I have no idea what they can do, what they are going to do. They've not told me anything. I didn't know they had planned on freezing the meeting if they had a problem.
Yep.
They had all that worked out.
Yep.
Call me into, actually, this very room we're sitting in now doing podcasts is the room they were meeting in.
More irony.
Yeah, more irony. And what did they say? We'd like to appoint you as our interim pastor.
Really?
From now on. And I went, really? What does that involve? Well, we need you to preach for us every Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. We'd like you to care for the church, and we'd like you to maintain everything you're doing now. I said, so it's middle of Sunday afternoon. I said, so I'm coming back tonight to preach. Yep. Okay. We'll do that. And I said, you know, all the salaries the same and everything. It's like we appointed you as our interim. They had the legal right to do that based on our constitution. So where God needed to reveal in our congregation, you know, some of the problems we were having and some of the contingency issues, the conflicts we were having, the committee, the board and the committee knew what was best, and God had already appointed them to take us to the next level. And I've been here now 20 years. And you know what we did is we cleared that problem up in the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever gets to pastor behind me, God help them, but whoever comes behind me to pastor, they can't be voted out because a bunch of people who don't go here don't like them.
That's exactly right.
That can't ever happen again.
Yep.
Because we needed to purge that out of our books.
We solved that problem.
And this was the moment that did it. And it was a backward step. It was like, what in the world just happened?
Yeah, so whoever does pastor after you, that was kind of your way of saying you're welcome.
You're welcome. That's right. Exactly.
We handled that for you.
Exactly. But I'm really wanting to encourage our pastors that when you ask for God to do a great movement, it's going to be, sometimes it's going to feel like it goes backwards.
Absolutely.
Right? Let's just skip to the picture. One of the simplest pictures of this is in Mark chapter 4, when Jesus tells the disciples in verse 35, Jesus says, "Let us get into the boat and go to the other side." That's all Jesus says in verse 35 of that story. Let us get in the boat and go to the other side. And then it says, and they took him, because he doesn't own the boat. They're now in charge.
Oh, yeah.
They put him in the boat. Jesus is inviting his disciples and including his disciples in his plan. We need to go to the other side, right? So they follow his plan, put him in the boat, head off to the other side. Well, what happens? In the middle of that little sea they're on, it says a fierce gale of wind comes up, so much so that it was about to sink the boat.
Oh, yeah.
The storm. Was this in their plan?
Nope.
In their plan, but it wasn't not. It was not in Jesus' plan.
That's
he
right.
did. So I'm thinking, they're thinking, did we make a mistake? I thought we were following God. This was supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
Let's go to the other
side.
We're
going with Jesus. Surely there wouldn't be
a the other side.
Surely right. There wouldn't be a storm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but following God is not fun and easy.
That's right.
Always. It's blessed. It's the greatest thing in the world to do, but it's not fun and easy. So they go wake up Jesus to help with their survival efforts. Do you not care that we're perishing? They literally think they're dying. Jesus gets up and calms the storm, and he has to teach them throughout the process of their discipleship, training the disciples. When I decide to do a great work and give you instructions, it's going to come with challenges.
You got to love that moment when they ask, do you not care that we are perishing? That's one of those,
yeah.
And you use this phrase all the time, so I'm going to use it. You use it a lot in your sermons. You know, I hope when we get to heaven, there's the big screen replay for a lot of these moments.
Sure.
That's one of those moments where I've always, as many times as I've heard you teach this as either as a sermon illustration, or you use this story a lot for inductive Bible study methods.
Yeah, I do.
I've always wanted to, on the big screen replay in heaven, see the look on Jesus' face.
Right.
When they say to him,
Jesus the Messiah, the Redeemer.
Jesus the Messiah, the Redeemer, who can speak to the storm and calm it, who created the storm.
Who left heaven to come and die on the cross to save us from our sins.
Exactly. When they look at him and say, do you not care that we are perishing?
Right.
I just want to see that, you know, you almost wonder if Jesus would have just like rolled his eyes for a minute. Like, really?
Yeah.
Really, guys?
Right.
Come on.
Well, he is put out with them because he actually says, how is it that you have no faith?
Exactly.
How is it that you did not take me at my word? I said, let's go to the other side. We're going to get to the other side.
Yep.
If I say, let's go to the other side.
That's what we're
going to
do.
We're going to the other side. Will the boat be full of water when we get there? Possibly. Will it drag early? Yep. But we are going to get there. You didn't need to wake
exactly.
me up.
Exactly. I don't think
they had to wake him up. By
pastoral
way.
Connection. If Jesus says, I'm taking your church to the other side, we're going to the other side.
But God's works are really often scary like that. They're uncomfortable. The disciples were afraid of dying in that process. And so Jesus went on and just trained his disciples week after week that the works they do for him would be challenging. And he would ask them to do all kinds of crazy things. When Jesus asks us to do ministry stuff, it doesn't always sound normal. Mary, Jesus' mom says, hey, here's a problem. They have no wine. Jesus looks at the servants and goes, hey, go get a bunch of water.
There's another inductive Bible study story.
Yeah, go get a bunch of water. You mean what? We don't need water. We need wine. So he's asking you to do something that doesn't make sense. And by the way, he wanted him to get a lot of water, which was really hard back then. You had to take these jars to the well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3,000 cups of water had to be retrieved to make 3,000 cups of wine for this giant party. When Jesus is with the disciples and he looks at them and he goes, hey, where can we buy bread to feed these 15,000 people that are coming up the hill? He's literally, he said this, John 6:6, he said this in order to test them. He knew what he was going to do, but he's testing his men.
That's right.
And it's a hard test. Where can we buy bread? There is nowhere, by the way, to buy that bread. And so they eventually show up with a little boy's lunch and go, all we have is a little boy's lunch.
That's all we got.
That's all we got. What are they among so many? Right? And Jesus is like, gosh, you guys just don't understand who I am yet. Right?
It's the knuckleheaded disciple.
Yeah, this is a hard work that has to be done. I have to test you, and all you have to do is look to me.
That's right.
And I'll help you with this. Jesus tells them to love their neighbors. And their neighbors, by the way, are Romans.
Yep.
They have to love the Romans who have them captive. They literally have to learn to love their Romans. He tells them, I want you to learn to share the gospel message with everyone. Go and tell the world. Go and speak it to the world.
That would include your enemies.
That would include all your enemies, right? So
sounds fun.
I'm just wanting to clarify. When you want a great work of God, don't be shocked when it comes with a lot of hard, back-breaking, brain-twisting challenges. Share the message of the gospel and watch God do great works. But I'd love for you to share this podcast with lay ministers, with youth pastors, your music leaders, fellow pastors, anybody that's in the ministry needs to know ministry is not supposed to be easy. Great works of God don't come easy.
That's right.
Right? They are complicated.
And it's not always going to look the way that you think it's supposed to look. It may work itself out completely different.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when all the disciples stood at a distance and watched Jesus bleed and die on the cross,
they're going, this wasn't in the plan, was it?
That is not how that was supposed to go.
Yep.
This did not go well. And they spent 3 days.
Today's a bad day.
They spent 3 days terrified.
Oh, yeah.
Till he showed back up, because that's what he does.
Exactly.
His great works require us to go through these challenges. So as a minister, pray for great works in your church. Seek them. Get your leaders seeking those great works. But please, please, please know it's going to be challenging.
Yep.
It's going to be hard. Hard's okay.
It's going to be complicated.
That's right.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of Rescuing Churches. We hope you found all the content and dialogue helpful and inspiring as always. If you'd like to give us some thoughts and feedback on the show, we'd love to hear from you at 601-909-0614, or you can email us at 614rebuild@gmail.com. You can also follow us on all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at 614rebuild.